Good evening, one and all. Yes, it's me, Barry, and a book and a chat, and I am back. Yes, my 2 weeks back home across the pond in England, which went very quickly, way too quickly. But I am here and back with you, and so is my guest. One of the things that obviously going on with the amount of terrorism going on, you just can't trust anything. You have to be everybody very vigilant, and that's one thing I always notice in England, the amount of cameras, whether it's a bus stop, a tube station, everywhere you go, you're being watched. And some people might not like it, but to my mind, it's helped with your safety. But that's my guest. He can talk a little bit about that, but he's one of these people who's got so many hats that he wears, he could have his own milliners, I tell you. From his life through, well, we'll talk about it in a minute, but look, let me just say, several different forms of work. When all the time he was writing, and now he's got a new book out, but I better introduce him first, because on the show today, I have the one and only John Beyer. Hi, John, how you doing?
Barry, thank you for having me, and thank you to your guests for taking the time to listen to me, and I'm glad you had a nice trip to your homeland for a couple of weeks. And you know, I couldn't help but hearing about the security, and I've been fortunate enough to visit England, beautiful country, 4 or 5 times. And one of my first times there, and I hope I'm not stepping out of line here, but one of my first times into London, I noticed the lack of trash cans, and that was back when the Irish Republican Army was doing things they shouldn't have been doing in England. And that really pointed out to me what terrorism is really like and how scary it can be.
Yeah, that's amazing. That's glad you brought that up, because that's one of the things. When 9/11 happened, I was over here and I was sitting in the data center with two great big TVs that we had at big screens. Yeah, we used to have one for the news and one for the weather in case anything happened with the data, with the data and the transmissions and all this sort of stuff. And everybody was shocked, and it was a terrible thing, but people were going, oh my god, my family's in Texas, they're going to hit the oil wells next, and they're going to do this and do that. And I thought, I've been living with it 25-30 years in England, and you were every day, as you say, the trash cans were removed because they used to drop the pipe bombs in the trash cans and all this sort of stuff. Mm-hmm. And yet, after all that, the week after 9/11, in New York, they had a 250 a head dinner for Sinn Féin, the IRA's political party. And I thought, what are you doing? You know, you got terrorists, and here you are celebrating terrorists. Amazing.
I just don't think people understand. They don't tie the knot and figure out that terrorism isn't just in one country, it's worldwide. Yeah. I mean, 9/11 was, I mean, obviously a terrible thing for the United States and for the world, for that matter. Mm. And I remember the first 2 weeks after it. I live in Southern California, quite a ways from New York.
Right.
And we didn't see any planes in the air, and that was an odd thing. I've never seen that in my life, is seeing that. And, I've been in law enforcement, education. I've been around this stuff, trainings. I've done trainings, and that was amazing. And then, to hear that, I didn't know about the fundraiser for St. Fan, but,
yeah.
I mean, it's rather disgusting as far as I'm concerned.
It made the front page of a couple of papers in England. In fact, I actually know the person who wrote the story put in the paper, but that's another matter. But, it as you say, it's all over the world, and people – You hear in America, you can't put a camera up there, it's against my civil rights or whatever. And the next moment, if something happens, then, why wasn't anything done? You can't have it both ways. If you've got nothing to hide and nothing to fear, why should you worry about the cameras?
Exactly. And I think, I'm not a lawyer, and I don't even play one on TV, but from law enforcement, if you're in the public domain, you're in the public domain.
Yeah.
And you can be photographed. We know that we're being photographed all the time. Yeah. My goodness, our phones are listening to us.
Yep.
Close the other night, Alexa listens to us.
Yes, yes, I read that. Yes. The people in the Alexa building are sitting there listening to us.
But Barry, they guarantee us that they don't know our name. Oh,
yeah.
Please stop.
Yeah, sure. But it's funny. One thing I noticed, well, two things I noticed. First of all, the last day before I came back, I did go into London. I mean, I was on the sort of southeast coast, but I did go into London on the last day because I was actually flying out of London City Airport, which I've never done before, the one right in the centre of London itself, which was an interesting thing for a start. But there are, I mean, you used to hardly ever see a policeman in England with a gun. I mean, it used to be that it used to be the case.
True.
There's a few special force stuff, and you know, in like perhaps airports and a few like that, but hardly anything. But that now, there are police with automatic rifles around the place, whereas it used to be the odd one or two. The lot of the major places, they're there. There's a lot more. Not everybody. I mean, yeah, I'm talking about just the major places, and also things like. That car that ran into the gates of Parliament, off along the bridge. There's a lot more sort of like bollards along the pavement, on these bridges and that, so people couldn't go onto the pavements. So, I know it's an afterthought, but it's a simple thing. It's blended in to make it look part of the bridge and stuff like that. It's not in the way of anybody because, it's only one every sort of like 5 yards or something like that, but it will serve a purpose, and little things like that.
But prevention, we have to learn from our history, right? And I do teach social studies, or as a teacher, I was teaching social studies, and we have to learn, and that's what history does. It teaches us, and then we get stronger. I mean, we have barriers, cement barriers, metal barriers around airports, major entertainment centers. It's just the way it goes. And not to jump the gun, but my novel Soft Target, which was my third novel, it was about a middle school in Southern California taken over by terrorists.
Yeah.
And the procedures, and it took two places. You saw the from the terrorist point of view, and then you saw it from the law enforcement point of view trying to resolve the issue. These are real issues, and
they
we
are.
Need to think. And as a writer, as you know, we always think of the question, what if? What if this occurred? How do we react to it? And I think that gives us a lot of stories. But it's also important because you can, when I was in law enforcement, I was on SWAT, and we used to think, okay, what if this room is buried, barricaded? What do we do? Is there another entrance? And, you plan it out. You have to think forward and not always knee-jerk reactions. And I think sometimes we do that as humans, but we need to study. We have people out there, experts in the field that can – you can't stop crazy. Let's just be honest. There's no way to stop a crazy. Okay? But you can stop a majority of terrorism. I think your country, our country, and a lot of other countries have done a pretty good job stopping things that we don't even know about.
The big thing now in England is the number of knife attacks. I mean, the actual number of, weapon attacks. I forgot there was like 5 deaths last year by guns in England, which is nothing. Or so far this year, I think it was in England. But the big thing is knife attacks. Now, they showed on the television while I was there a fold-up knife made of cardboard, like a credit card. It basically looks like a credit card, but you fold it in a certain way, it becomes a knife. We're never going to stop that. It's like the 3D 3D printers and the risk that they have. I mean, they do some good, but they can build stuff that's not going to be picked up because it's.
I mean, and look at all the people that have run cars and trucks into people.
Exactly.
Have bombs and that.
Yep.
And you can't outlaw everything. Pretty soon we'll be outlawing utensils, no more spoons,
because
that's the last resort.
Yeah. But as you've been sort of saying, while we've been discussing this, of course, you do come from this double, if you like, type of background with your law enforcement knowledge going right through, as you said, to the SWAT area, but from local forces on the beat, etc. Then into education, which I guess is another sort of law enforcement, if you like. but you've gone through that with that experience, but all that time, I guess you were actually writing, as a hobby background or whatever.
Yes, I mean, I cannot remember when I did not write. And like a lot of writers, I wrote in middle school, and of course, I found a box about a year or two ago, and some of my writings from middle school and high school were there. I'm like, oh. And but there was actually one that I went, hey, that's not really too bad. I might rewrite that someday. It's a short story.
Yes.
But, I mean, I've always written in both nonfiction and fiction. But as I got older in my 20s, I wrote a nonfiction. I wrote for some newspapers in Southern California. I had a monthly column in a magazine for years. And so I kind of wrote nonfiction. And then, you know, life gets in the way, and I worked on my doctorates and dissertations and four girls raising them. And
oh, cry.
So pretty soon, I know. And then pretty soon that you have no time because, you know, you're hustling them to soccer and baseball and this and this. And by the time you get home, you're exhausted. But I always knew I'd go back into it. And I really have gone full bore in the last probably 11 years.
See, this, with me, it's a little bit the opposite. No, I did the writing, and I've always, like yourself, I did writing, I did the poems, the songs, the short stories, and then the sort of couple of books and stuff like that. And then when my first book came out, I went on doing the sort of tour stuff online and went on a couple of radio shows, and I went on one, and the host was terrible. I ended up basically running the show. it was that bad. And I thought to myself, I enjoy a good chat. I'll give this radio stuff a whirl, so I did, and that was like about 9 years ago, and I'm coming up to like 2,000 shows now, plus I got two music shows as well.
Nice.
And my writing has gone a little bit on the back burner. I do write parodies because I do a bit of singing and karaoke, and I like writing parodies of some of the songs, so I still do a little bit, but like yourself, you've gone on to carried on like a lot of people to the writing. I've gone to the I've taken the dark side.
No, I love the idea of you chatting. The only better thing would be if we were in a pub.
That's
chatting.
Right. That's right. Yeah, but that's what it says. Chat over a cup of tea. That's why I have to have a cup of tea. But like
there you go.
Like you said, you did do this, but then you got into your novels and you had Hunted and Soft Target, as you mentioned, and then Operation Scorpion, I think, was the last one before this new one has just come out.
Yeah.
And that was again, all this is again what if sort of stuff, isn't it?
Yes. So Operation Scorpion is about a rogue military officer. But it starts off as just a simple retired detective out of Riverside, California, who is now a private detective. And he does, the worst cases, you name it, he does it. And then he gets a missing person one. And it leads into this whole mystery into the Mojave Desert, and it turns into a homicide, and then it turns into out at Fort Irwin, which is a military post, a army post out here, Fort, and all the intrigue of trying to get dirty bombs for terrorists, selling nuclear waste, because we had a mountain out here that the government was building in Yucca Mountain.
Yes.
And it was supposed to, and they stopped it, and now we try to figure out where we're going to put our nuclear waste, which we have.
Right.
And that was going to be a perfect place, but they stopped it. So now this person has an idea what to do with the waste, and he's making a lot of money on it. But these things happen.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I mean, it's fiction, but it touches on nonfiction, because if you read the papers and, you'd love to be on a fly on the wall, the FBI or CIA, and know how many things they've stopped that they, obviously can't let the public know, or we panic, right?
Yeah, all the time you find out, but you hear about that, that this person was stopped investigating this, and this person. What's the one I had the other day on the show? The two Americans, the two people that basically went into Lewis and Clark. Was that it?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, I think it was Clark. About supposedly committed suicide, but
right,
he shot himself twice, which is
unless he was a really bad shot and just got winged, he winged himself and then said, "Oh, I got to practice." Maybe the first one was a practice shot.
There's
a controversy in that whole thing too.
Yeah, they reckon the president sent them to look out for Welsh people. because there's the tribe that speaks Welsh, and they didn't want they did that to make sure that they weren't actually Welsh, you know, from, because they didn't want the British to claim that they are actually the Welsh people have found this place first and everything like that. There's all sorts of theories. It's quite amazing what I get on this show.
Hey, we're not going to refight the revolution, are
we? No, you know, I can tell you that the Declaration of Independence is illegal because it wasn't all signed on one day. Three people signed it one day, yep, and the rest another. So that makes it illegal. But never mind, I won't press that point. You know?
Yeah, let's not go there.
But where we will go is your new book, which is Iquitos. Am I saying it right?
No, it's Iquitos. It's a strange word. Iquitos.
Okay.
The past will kill. Iquitos is the largest village in the world. That the only way you can get there is by airplane or boat. It's in the confluence of the Amazon, where the Amazon starts in Peru and Colombia. And it's a beautiful town. Of course, it's 100 degrees and 100% humidity. But yeah, it's a great – yeah. So we spend – my wife and I, we travel. Whenever I write a book, I always travel to where the action is going to be, because I truly believe research is number one.
Right.
And to feel it. So I thought and Iquitos has the main character is Jonas Peters, but his co-main character is Frank Sanders, who's in Operation Scorpion.
Okay.
And they did work together as detectives in Riverside Homicide. And then they both went their separate ways after retiring, became private detectives. And on this case, they're working together kind of by accident, but they work together on it. And then Jonas Peters has to go down to Peru. So my wife and I spent a month in the Amazon doing research. And as she said, it's the greatest trip that I'll never go on again.
It was wonderful. Nice place to visit, but I wouldn't like to stay there.
Oh, my. And I'd go back, Barry, I'd go back tomorrow. It was so fun. But, I mean, insects the size of, your hand, mosquitoes that could carry off your newborn. I mean, it's snakes. And, you can't go out in the jungle at night without a guide because, you're going to step on something that's going to take your life. So, but it was exciting. It was exciting.
I could imagine. Not a place on my visitation list, shall I say, at the moment. But then, again, you've got these – great to have these characters come back and work together again. But it's a lot of putting pieces together again, isn't it? Because, there's murders and bombings and stuff like that. And it's – hang on, how are these linked? What's this part, isn't it? That sort of makes you think type novel.
Right. Some writers, we all have our own ways to write. And some are formula writers. Some use whiteboards, paper, sticky notes. Mine is character driven and dialogue driven.
Yep.
So I can leave my story a week and then come back and Jonas is talking to me again.
Yep.
And in fact, my characters are always with me and I'm always thinking, oh, I know what's going to happen next. But a lot of times I don't. A lot of times I'll sit down and I'm thinking I'm going to A, and my character says, no, you know what, we're going to go B.
And then my wife
says, well, they're fictional characters, and I say, you tell them that.
Exactly. Okay? I've said this all along, that, it's almost like there's a parallel universe, and these people are telling you their story, and you better listen. They're telling you the story. If you don't listen, they'll get the hump, and they won't talk to you.
They won't. I mean, I've never had writer's block because I kind of listen to my characters, right? And I'm writing a new novel, and I really have no idea. I don't want to say it's a cop novel. It is, because it deals with a cop, but it's a darker, more he's looking at himself. It's a real total introspective on himself and where he is, where he's been. In all this, and it's a little bit different than I normally, and I'm excited about writing it, but I have no idea where it's going.
Yeah, well,
it'll
you,
go there.
You don't. I mean, the characters, as you say, the characters will tell you. They'll lead you down paths. If you think you're going one way, it's where the other. You have no idea. You know roughly where the end might be, but you end up sometimes, and I don't know if you get this, so you end up with some minor characters that want their own book even. You know, they're minor characters, they become major characters, and then they say, well, you've written about this in the next one, why don't you write about me in the next one? You know, I want to be part of it, not sort of just in the background. And
no, I mean, that's where Frank Sanders came. I had no intention of writing, but he was at, I think he bumps into Jonas in Hunted, and just as just passing by, a fellow detective, and then here we are, three books later, he's there.
And it's funny what you said about writer's block, because I totally agree with you. There is no such thing as writer's block. It's the characters don't want to talk to you that day.
Yes, that's all it is. That's all it is.
And you've got to listen. I mean, I would say that 80 to 90% of the people I get on this show are like you and I, you know, when it comes to that sort of thing and the characters. And that's why people, you know, you get people who get talked to at night, you know, and they have to have a piece of paper by their bed to write the part of the story down and stuff like that. Occasionally, and this is, I think the main one I'm thinking of is one of these ladies who wrote historical romance novels. And she had a whole wall in front of her, she was telling us, with all the characters up there, you know, and not stick a post-it note sort of thing, you know, and this one's had a relationship with this one, and this one's the illegitimate one of this one. And they have to go through that. Now, that's not then the story. That's them trying to create a puzzle, you know, a picture from a puzzle.
Right.
And I guess...
Go
ahead.
But I have to agree, because... I'm right. Fiction is not easy to write. Okay, it's to me it's a little easier than if you're writing nonfiction.
Right.
Because you kind of skirt, you know, the truth here and there. But I am in the middle of writing another novel, a historical novel on Vlad III, Vlad Dracul, Vlad Tepes, from Romania. We spent a month in Romania 2 years ago, and I do have whiteboards, and I swore I never would, but. Trying to keep the dates accurate. Who married who? Who divorced who? Who killed who?
Slightly different. Date, you know? I totally agree. That sounds interesting, because he's a really interesting character. So that sounds.
Well, I just sent out six letters today, emails to different government agencies in Romania, because in Romania he's considered a hero.
Yeah.
So I'm writing it from the fact that he's a hero and not this, you know, the monster that everybody wanted to create.
Oh no!
Yeah, I understand exactly what you did.
Yeah, he managed with 6,000 or something, a very small number of troops to keep this huge army at bay. And he did it by mental terror, in a way.
Right.
You know, this whole impaling bit and all this sort of stuff was a sort of a mental approach to frighten these people.
Of course.
And that's what put them off, and that's what saved the country. Definitely.
Yeah, he played mind games with the Ottomans,
exactly.
Because they'd come in and they see a force of impaled captured soldiers. You know, and the Sultan said, "What can I do, a man who will do this?" And left with 250,000 soldiers.
Yeah, it was horrendous. I mean, it was big numbers against. I'm not sure. Is it 10,000? I can't remember how many he had, but
it depended on the. He had three reigns. It depended on what reign, but I think the most he ever had at one time was 20.
Yeah.
Which is nothing, you know, compared to these armies of hundreds.
And Ottomans had swept the rest of Europe and Asia.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. I mean, people don't realize the Ottoman Empire reigned for right up until after the First World War. I mean, it really was. It's one of these unknown things that these people lasted longer than the Romans or the British or anybody.
Now they're Turkey, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, indeed.
Yeah.
That sounds a fascinating book. But hey, heck, time's gone by. So fascinating talking about stuff with you, especially this new book of yours. Sounds really interesting. But what I'm going to do now is hand the show over to you so you can tell everybody, you know, where they can find out more about you and your books and obviously your new books that hopefully are going to come out soon.
Okay. Well, thank you. You can find, if you just Google, ask Mr. Google anything, but if you just type in John R. Beyer, B-E-Y-E-R, author, it'll take you anywhere you want to go, Amazon, everywhere that my books are sold. You can go to Black Opal Books. That's the publisher that buys my books. Black Opal Books, they're out of Oregon.
Okay.
You can go to John Robert Beyer at Weebly.com, and that's my author page. And pretty much you can find me anywhere, where books are sold. In fact, Barnes & Noble, I'll be doing a book signing in Barnes & Noble, if anybody listening is in the Phoenix area, Phoenix, Arizona, on May 4th at 2 o'clock. And I'll be there, and there's going to be an author panel talking about writing, things like that. So I'll be in Phoenix on that book tour. I just finished one a month ago, so we're picking it up in Arizona. So, yeah, please just look me up, and, man.
When, hopefully when you, especially this, say the one about Vlad, I'd very like to follow up on that one when that one comes out with you. But yeah, when the next one comes out, please let me know, and I'll get you back on the show.
Well, I appreciate that, Barry. I want to thank you and especially your audience for taking the time to spend some moments with me as a writer, and I really do appreciate the effort and the time they gave.
Great. Well, thank you very much, John. It's been fascinating chatting to you. Good luck with the new book, and obviously the other stuff's still going strong as well, so keep it up.
Thank you.
Thank you. Well, there you go. My guest today, John R. Beyer, and he's, as he said, B-E-Y-E-R, but it's Beyer. Great stuff. The books he's written before, some real good ones there, Hunted, Soft Target, Operation Scorpion, really good stuff, very well received. And if you like this sort of stuff, the mystery, but with twists and turns, and in the modern vogue, if you like, every day we hear about some new form of attack or something that we, terrorism, and not just terrorism, the whole thing that goes on behind it. These are the books for you. And of course, as he said, his new one, Equitus, I think that's what it was. And it's another great story to follow up with characters that we've had before. And as he was saying, they sort of merge together. They want to work together. And they tell the author that, hey, this time put me in with him. And lo and behold, here it is with the new book. Great stuff. So look out for him on the internet and that. I'll be back tomorrow. And my guest tomorrow is Brenda Garza. I hope that's right. And I'll see that. But until then, I guess we've just got one thing left to say. Don't forget.